This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 135, where we're going to catch up on some of the cloud news and talk about Microsoft's LinkedIn acquisition, recorded live June 15th, 2016. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft cloud world, including Microsoft Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, the competitive landscape, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Connell.
Send us a tweet either to the show at MS Cloud Show or to Chris at LoungeflyZ.
Or to Andrew at Andrew Connell.
As we'd love to connect with you. We're just two dudes telling you how we see it. Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid is a Microsoft Gold partner whose mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of technology. Valid is always on the lookout for consultants, architects, and engineers. Do you know Azure, BI, and Analytics, .NET, Office 365, or SharePoint? Look them up on Valid.nl.
Morning, AC.
Morning, CJ.
I love it that when we do that, I always try to imitate you and you always try to imitate me. That's funny.
Yeah, so it's always fun to start off the day with a nice good morning.
It is indeed. It is indeed. How is it going for you?
It's going good, man. I just finished watching the SpaceX, another Falcon 9 launch where they successfully deployed two rockets and then they deployed two satellites and then the landing didn't go as planned. But Elon Musk never ceases to crack you up.
Yep, it's true. He was like, I think his tweet went something along the lines of ascent and orbital stage went to plan or something. But Booster experienced a RUD, which he then followed up with was a rapid unscheduled disassembly. Oh, that was priceless. He's good. He's a good sport.
Yeah, it was interesting to watch. I was watching it live on the live stream, and it was a lot of speculation on what happened. But I mean, they're pumping along, man. It just seemed like, what was it, 2-3 weeks ago that they just put up another rocket. And the main goal of all these missions is to deploy satellites or to send a cargo to the space station, and all that stuff is going great. And they just, you know, this one, they just lost the one coming back, which is, of course, that's the news that's probably going to break, and that everyone's like, oh yeah, it failed. It's like, yeah, but so they currently have a track record of 3 in a row landing on the drone ship. So big deal, you lost one, but
yeah, I mean, they knew they're doing some quite high velocity landings. You know, coming back from high velocity launches. So I think they're expecting to lose a few.
The other thing is, because since we last talked, I have been immersed myself getting ready for a conference coming up at the end of the month. I'm going to be at the SP TechCon show in Boston at the end of the month. And I'm doing a session on Microsoft Graph, but I'm doing a session about building Office add-ins using Angular 2. So the last 2 days, I've been immersing myself in a bunch of Angular 2 stuff and getting caught up from, I stayed away from the betas and the alphas, and I just waited to jump it. I've been watching stuff, but I haven't played with it. And oh my God, it is such a better experience as far as developer goes from Angular 1. There's a little more setup stuff involved, but mainly because you're using the latest and greatest of the web tech stuff that's out there. But oh my God, this is just, it's such a better developer experience. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Very nice. Very nice. So it's good to feel good about some new dev stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So when this session's done, I mean, I'm going to have, about the time the session goes live, I'll probably put a blog post together that explains, you know, what it was. And I'm also, or what I learned from it, what I like about Angular 2. And I'm having a little bit of fun with this one because I'm actually going to have the entire sample application running in a container. So you'll be able to, if you have Docker installed, you'll just be able to spin it up, run it, and be able to see everything running very, very easily. So that'd be pretty cool.
Excellent. Very cool.
How about you, man?
We are, this last sort of weekend and last couple of days, I've been working on getting the stuff that we're going to be launching at Ignite later this year, starting to build out our production hosting, or not hosting really, we're doing it all in Azure, but production environment. So we've got a couple of different apps we're going to be going live with, one of which is a trial app. And so we've got that up into our new production environment and doing some perf testing on it and all that sort of stuff. So it's nice to buy some big boxes and get stuff rolling. It's cool.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. So you're going to be at Ignite, obviously, because you guys are our expo there.
Yes, that's right. We'll be exhibiting. We're a silver sponsor at Ignite. Mm. So if you're going to Ignite, come and look for the Hyperfish booth and I'll walk you through what we've been up to all this time.
Ah, cool. I decided actually to join Ignite as well. I've paid for 2 days of like expo pass. I'm not going for the content. It's mostly for networking and working the expo booth and stuff. So I bought a 2 day or two individual day expo passes. And man, I waited a little too long to get a hotel because holy crap, they are like everything. Yeah, everything nearby is booked up. So I'm kind of far away and I'm probably going to end up just driving up since it's not too far. But I'm on the fence still if I'm going, but I figure it's the day expo pass is about, I think, $300 a day. Mm-hmm. And I can cancel up to, I think, like 2 or 3 weeks out for like just a $25 a day penalty. So
that's cool.
Yeah, it was worth going through and at least saying, you know, earmarking it. But
let me know when you're up for some booth duty.
I can do it for. Hey, I have, was it Tuesday, Wednesday is when I have expo pass, but I don't have a hotel room on Monday night. So I'm either flying in or driving in like crazy early on Tuesday, or I get to try and find a spot to stay on Monday night.
Very cool. Oh, yeah. Hopefully we'll manage to meet up there. Hey, I'm speaking at another conference in August. The Digital Workplace Conference in New Zealand is running August 9th and 10th, obviously, of this year. And, it's all things cloud and SharePoint and development and IT pro and business user and stuff. And I'm heading back down to New Zealand to go and talk at that conference in sort of mid-August, 9th or 10th of August. I suppose that's sort of early to mid. So if you're in the neighborhood and going to that conference, I'd love to meet some Cloud Show listeners. So come say hi.
Awesome. Very cool.
Hey, so on this show, we've got some cloud news we want to dig into. And then the biggie, obviously, is this week that Microsoft announced a LinkedIn acquisition. So we're going to talk about that in a wee bit. But why don't you kick things off with some cloud news?
Hey, before we do that, shouldn't you know your Microsoft Cloud?
Oh, you totally should.
All right. So we've been doing this segment the last few episodes about know your Microsoft Cloud. I did one, you did one. And hey, we got a listener that actually jumped in and said, do you accept listener submissions? We're like, abso-freaking-lutely. So Paul Schaeflein has recorded his own Know Your Microsoft Cloud. So we're going to go ahead and play it, and he's going to tell you what you should know about here. So let's roll the clip.
Hello, CJ and AC. This is Paul Schaeflein, and I wanted to give you a little tidbit about the Microsoft Cloud that I use for your Know Your Microsoft Cloud segment. To provide a search experience on my blog, I use Microsoft Azure's search services. I create an index, I define a schema for the index, and I upload documents into the index. Although in my case, it's not a document, but rather a string of HTML. It can really be any data. Azure Search Services handles the indexing of the content in those documents, no matter what type I upload, and also provides a REST endpoint for me to do searches against the index. The Azure portal gives me a web interface to do a lot of this setup. It even provides an interactive search explorer utility that I can do to test my search queries to make sure they're correct. You can even connect the search index to Power BI, which then gives you fancy graphics and reports about the analytics of your search experience. If you want to learn a bit more, you can go to my blog at www.schaeflein.net and search for Azure Search, which is kind of meta. I like it. Keep up the great work.
Cool. Well, hey, thanks, Paul. Thanks for your Know Your Microsoft Cloud segment. And hey, if anybody else has one that they want to record and that they want to post, please feel free to record it and then go to our site and post it like you're submitting a question. Just go to our contact form on the website and there'll be a place for you to post a link where we can grab a hold of it. So another cool thing that was updated with the podcast this week, man. Hey, we got we finally have a dynamic RSS feed that's up and running.
Woohoo! Those of you who aren't familiar with how we publish the podcast, in the past, it was pretty much all manual, including updating an XML document with the iTunes feed and the RSS for the podcast. And needless to say, you might have noticed that our podcasts went live at pretty much random times throughout the Tuesday, depending on when AC or I would get around to it, mostly me. And it was kind of painful. And sometimes I'd forget, and sometimes the podcast would go live on a Wednesday instead. and this Tuesday, I woke up and I was having my breakfast, and then I heard a ding, and my phone went off, and I got an Overcast notice or a little notification from Overcast that said, hey, there's a new Cloud Show podcast available. And I was like, it's magic. I didn't even have to do anything.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It's a long time coming. We should have had this 2 years ago, but We host on Orchard. Like, we have a custom module that hosts the podcast for us. And frankly, building a dynamic RSS feed was a little trickier than I thought it was initially. And so we were just like, ah, screw it. We'll just do, this isn't a task that needs to be automated. We'll get around to it. I never expected that to be 2.5 years later, but hey, what the hell, it's working.
Yeah, it's really cool. I love it. And so hopefully people will get podcasts more in a more timely manner, in a bit more of a dependable manner than previously. So very pleased to have that done.
Absolutely. So hey, hey, for so the,
I'm sorry. News, shall we?
Yeah. Do you want to go back and forth on this? Or you want me just to rattle it off? How do you want to do it?
Well, I don't know what list you're looking at, but I've got a couple of items.
Okay.
And so let's just do a couple each.
Okay. So I got the Azure Pricing and Service Updates newsletter that came out just recently. So big thing is that Azure Search S3 and S3 high density tiers that are now in public preview. What these are is it helps developer or Azure Search helps developers to build rich first-class search experiences. Compared to the S2, the S3 tier delivers double the storage and number of documents hosted within your Azure Search service and offers low latency for large data sets. The high density one lets you deliver unique search experience within applications that support multi-tenant environments. So there's the first bit of news that I got here. That's gone in public preview. S3 and S3 high density tiers in public preview.
Ooh, cool, cool. I've got one. Introduction of a new preview API to the Microsoft Graph identity risk events. So in the Microsoft Graph, graph.microsoft.com is the place to start for that. There's a new type of data available in the preview version of that, and it's called identity risk events. And it basically gives you API level access to information around things like failed logins, accounts that might have been hacked, basically information that comes from the identity protection system around Azure AD and what's going on with your users and accounts and where they're logging in from and all that sort of stuff. So there's an API behind that so you can go take a look at what that gets. But it's things like anonymous IP risk events, impossible travel risk events. This is an interesting one. This is if you log in from, say, Jacksonville, Florida, and then like 5 seconds later you log in from New Zealand, it's probably not the same person. Leaked credentials risk events, malware risk events, suspicious IP risk events, unfamiliar location risk events. So yeah, you can go take a look at that. There's some interesting data in there. I think it requires a certain level of subscription. So
that's Azure AD Premium, I think, is what does
Azure
that.
Yeah, so it's Azure Active Directory Identity Protection, and I believe that comes with Premium. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's for everybody, but certainly a new API that you can go have a play with.
Awesome. Hey, there's a couple Azure services that have now been extended to where they're generally available in different locations. So one of them is DocumentDB that is now generally available in Canada, in the Canada data center, specifically the Canada Central and Canada East. And in addition, the Redis Cache Premium tier is now available in Canada, both the data centers that I just mentioned a second ago, and in India as well.
Very cool. We use the Redis Premium tier at Hugging Fish. Yeah. It's super quick.
That's good. It's designed to be that way.
It's also super expensive. You definitely pay for it, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, you said premium, and I just kind of was like, whoa, there you go. So.
Yeah, it's nice. We use a bunch of sort of PaaS type services like that from various places, which I'll get into in my picks.
Big, oh, very cool. Very
another
cool.
One, GigJam is now available for everyone, or the preview is now available. Do you remember about a year ago, I think it was at Ignite last year, there was a preview or a demo given during the keynote by Julia White of a new application called GigJam. It's GigJam. That's a tongue twister. GigJam. So GigJam preview is now available to everyone with Windows, Mac, iPhone, and iPad. Start using GigJam today. It's a new type of collaboration tool, helping work with others and you know, working on content together and pulling stuff together. So it's kind of, I actually find a really hard way to describe. You've got to go take a look at the video. There's a blog up on the Office blogs that we'll link to. But yeah, it's out for a preview, so you can go take a look at that. It's pretty neat. I'm not sure if it's going to take off. I'm not a believer just yet, but it'll be interesting to watch. It's kind of one of those things that's quite out there, and it's so far out there that I'm not 100% sure that people will get it. But it is definitely a new way of working together.
Yeah, I saw some people talk about it in a private setting. And I think that there were, when Microsoft kind of announced it to like an NDA level group, and then I think that the majority of the responses were much more around confusion than anything else. They didn't really understand exactly what the use case was. But yeah, we'll see.
It's definitely one of those things that's like so different that I think you sort of default to your normal ways of working with people, and it might be just a little step too far for people to really get it. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Hey, another one here is that if you are a developer and you're interested in the whole DockerCon and Docker world and everything, DockerCon is a conference that's coming up. It's coming up in, I think it's what, the end of June? I think it is?
It's Monday next week.
Oh, there you go. So it's a little bit soon. Well, I guess this will be interesting. I was going to say that you could sign up for seeing the live stream from the different events that, from all the general sessions that come out for on Monday and Tuesday of the first 2 days of DockerCon. So this will be, I guess the podcast will be published on day two of DockerCon. So you will have a chance to still jump in there, but usually live stream stuff, you can go back and you can see the recordings for it. And they do a really good job too of taking the recordings and posting them to up into their channel up in YouTube. But another side of this though is that CJ and I are going to be sitting down and talking relatively soon with someone from Microsoft about Windows containers and their story around Docker and everything. So by the time this episode comes out, look in your email if you sign up for our mailing list. We will be sending out an email to all of our mailing list subscribers soliciting a couple of questions that you may want to have us ask on the episode where we talk to Microsoft about Windows containers. So the email, I'll schedule it to go out about 3 or 4 hours after the podcast goes live, or maybe the day after the podcast goes live. So if you're not on the newsletter and you want to have an input onto the questions that are going to be asked, I'd suggest that just right away go sign up for the newsletter so you can get that email of where you can go submit your questions and such.
Yeah, and we're expecting Windows container news at DockerCon, so it'll be interesting to see if that comes out. I will be in attendance at that show. It's being run in Seattle, so I'm going to head down there and sit in on the keynotes and go to some of the sessions and hope to learn a bunch more about the new stuff coming around Windows and containers. Obviously, we use Docker at Hyperfish a bunch, so there's a bunch more in it for me, obviously, for work, but yeah, expecting some news around the Windows container stuff.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, that's a bunch of news we got here.
Yeah, exactly. But the big one, obviously, one this week was Microsoft buying LinkedIn for $26 billion.
Man, this is a monster acquisition.
This is not just a monster acquisition. This is the biggest acquisition.
Isn't it? I was wondering about that. Has there been a bigger one?
Oh, yeah, there has been. AOL bought Time Warner for $100 billion.
Oh, okay.
So there's definitely been bigger, but this is certainly Microsoft's biggest and certainly the largest in recent memory. Hmm. But yeah, AOL, I believe, bought Time Warner for, I think, over $100 billion, in fact. It was a lot.
And let's put it in perspective, right? So Microsoft bought Minecraft, 2 years ago in 2014 for $2.5 billion, and then they bought Yammer for, that was...
1.2?
Yes. 1.2. Skype was around $1 or $2 billion, something like that?
Skype was 8, I think. 8.
Skype was $8 billion.
Yep.
Okay. So just putting it in perspective, this is showing you like how big of a deal this really was to Microsoft to go buy LinkedIn.
Oh, yeah. This is a monster. And what's interesting is it seems to have gone one of two ways, right? All of the initial reactions. So first up, this was kept ridiculously secret.
Mm-hmm.
This didn't leak, which is very, very, I guess what's the right word there? Very, very uncommon these days.
Mm-hmm.
What's more is they sat on the deal for a month before letting it out. So the letter of intent was signed over a month ago. And it still didn't leak. So Satya kept a very tight ship, along with the LinkedIn folks, obviously. Must have been a very, very small audience that knew about it, because as far as I'm aware, there were no leaks prior. I mean, there wasn't even speculation about this, right? There's been a lot of speculation about Salesforce buying LinkedIn, but not over Microsoft buying LinkedIn, that I've seen at least anyway. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but I certainly haven't seen anything about it. So yeah, they signed the letter of intent a month before the deal was announced, and managed to keep it a secret, which is That's impressive in and of itself.
Yeah, it really is. I saw that when there was a ton of speculation, it was surprising that it didn't leak before the news actually came out. Not just what you're saying, like leaking ahead of time, but I mean, like the morning that the news came out, all of a sudden you saw a little stock alert come out and say that trading had been halted, Microsoft trading had been halted pending news.
And, yeah.
I mean, even with the speculation that came out from that, I mean, there's a ton of stuff that went around, but LinkedIn was never mentioned. I mean, right. There were acquisitions, there were write-downs, all kinds of stuff, but that was never mentioned. So that was really surprising. I tell you, the response to it has been really interesting, too. Initially, I think, you know, Twitter, Facebook, everything, it seemed just light up with a bunch of, huh?
Yeah,
and a lot of confusion on what was going on there. And hey, you can put me still in that same group. I still don't think I fully understand the rationale behind this. I know you've got a take on it, and I got some opinions on it, but I'm still a little perplexed at this one. Very much in the same way I was perplexed about the whole Minecraft one. But
yeah, I agree. I think there was all of the opinions I saw initially were WTF. Like, what on earth is going on here? And initially I am still shocked. Like, I'm shocked that they did the deal of this size. I'm not so confused about why they did it. I've got some reasons why I think it's a really great deal for Microsoft. The price confuses me a little bit. And just because it's so much money.
Yeah.
I actually think it's value. I don't think they overpaid for it. When you look at recent valuation of SaaS software, it's kind of in line with how valuations have been going the last 6 months. So I don't think it's completely out of the ballpark and nuts. And in fact, I think they got a reasonable deal considering LinkedIn's stock back in December was like 40% higher than it is today. Mm-hmm. And then it obviously took a tumble in January, a big tumble in January, but from that perspective, I think they got a really good deal. But in terms of valuations, I think the Microsoft deal is roughly, I think they valued it roughly 8.1 or 8.2 times trailing 12-month revenue. LinkedIn makes a lot of money. It doesn't make a lot of money. It loses some money, but it has a lot of revenue. It's got $3 billion in cloud revenue. And so based on that, it's roughly 8.1 times trailing 12-month revenue or something along those lines, which is not completely out of the ballpark of what other deals have been made for of this type. They've been roughly in the 7.5 to 8 times trailing 12-month revenue. So it's not completely out of the ballpark. It's just a crap load of money. Where I really have a problem with it is what's the opportunity cost of using that money for this versus something else? That's really where I get... where I'm not 100% certain of whether it's worth it or not.
Yeah, some of the stuff about the money, I mean, there's some interesting observations here. So on February the 4th, LinkedIn, their stock was sitting at, they closed at $192 a share. And on February the 5th, the very next day, they closed at $108. So almost a 50% fall in just one day from a recent report, a quarterly reporting that came out for Q4 from them.
Yeah.
Some of the things that are interesting about this, I mean, so let's just play it by the numbers. Let me just throw a few things out and then I'll throw my two cents in. This is equal to 6.6 of Microsoft's $394 billion market cap. It's $196 per share, which is a 50% increase from where the stock closed, from the LinkedIn stock closed on Friday. Mm-hmm. And their stock jumped 47% when the deal was announced. It's $3.2 billion. That's, like you said, the trailing 12-month revenue is about $3.2 billion, or about 3.6% of Microsoft's $87 billion in revenue during the same period. Mm-hmm. Let's see, what was the other one that I wanted to come out here? LinkedIn boasts of more than 105 million monthly active users. It's kind of funny because I saw somebody from Microsoft tweet or put on Facebook saying that LinkedIn boasts more than 105 monthly active users. Like, I think you forgot an M there, man. Yeah. Brad something said that. Brad Anderson, that's right. This makes LinkedIn the world's largest social network for professionals, up over 9% from the previous year. So it's really interesting. I think, you know, the dollar amount is definitely interesting. And I think the opportunity cost of what they could have used this money for is also an interesting question. I mean, it's not like this is all the money that Microsoft had sitting around. They could still make other acquisitions of quite large sizes.
Yeah.
But when I look at, you know, what does this give them? What does this give them when you had other things that you could end up doing with this? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I guess there's a couple of the targets, popular targets, kind of come to mind here. You know, one is that people keep bringing up is, what about Slack? You know, Slack is, I know it doesn't have nearly the user base that what LinkedIn has, but it also gives something that Microsoft has been struggling mightily to be able to tackle in a way in terms of like the chat and the enterprise style comms. But another piece too is, what about Salesforce? The opportunity of not purchasing Salesforce, which has been a huge rumor there. So the LinkedIn acquisition is, I find it to be really, really interesting. I saw one person have one pretty funny joke here saying, okay, so they bought Yammer, they bought LinkedIn. Was this going to become a new Office 365 service called YankedIn?
Yeah, possibly. Never rule things like that out. I agree. I think for me, it boils down to a couple of reasons. One is, strategically, this could have been a middle finger to Salesforce, because I'm pretty sure Salesforce has been sniffing around LinkedIn for a while. And when you consider the value of the data in LinkedIn to sales teams. So first up, LinkedIn's paid offering is basically for salespeople who want to do digging around at organizations to see who's responsible for what and who knows who, and being able to search within, you know, all of the LinkedIn data for people that might be there, the right person, the right buyer for whatever they're selling, right? Mm-hmm. So when you couple LinkedIn's data with CRM systems, it's an extremely valuable proposition. And the reason I say that is because CRM systems all suck and everybody hates them. And it's always because they're a reactive tool. Everybody is the only thing they do with CRM systems is put data into them. They never really get valuable data out of them. Everybody goes to LinkedIn to go and get valuable data out. And so when you bring LinkedIn's data into a CRM system, you've got this coupling of a record of what you've done with a customer. And then you've also got the data about a customer, about who does what and who's responsible for what and all that sort of stuff. And suddenly your CRM system becomes this interesting data source, as opposed to this pain in the ass thing that you only ever used to have to go in and record your meetings and calls and interactions with customers in. So it really changes the game as far as CRM systems go. So I think from that perspective, Mark Benioff will be kicking himself over missing this deal, because it really gives Microsoft a one-up with CRM over changing the game around CRM systems from just a boring data entry tool to something that gives you some interesting data back. So that's one point, I think. But hey, who knows? Microsoft may fail to execute on this entirely, and we'll see. I wouldn't be surprised. So second point is, think about, like, LinkedIn is kind of like Active Directory for everybody outside of the organization. And so Microsoft is the leader and has the vast market share of identity information about people inside companies, whether that be the cloud or on-premises. AD is ubiquitous, right? It is for every enterprise on the planet, pretty much. AD is the data source for user information. And when you couple that with information about connections between people outside of an organization, I see that as a really interesting avenue for extending AD to be more than just a data source about people within an organization, but also a data source of connections between people outside the organization. So I think that's a fascinating avenue that they could go down. And then you just think of the little tactical examples of what you could do with LinkedIn data and Microsoft experiences, which I think is just really the cherry on the top, like surfacing LinkedIn data across through Office and all that sort of stuff. Like, yeah, whatever. Okay. It's going to be some nice new little opportunities for nice cherry on top type features, but nothing strategically like totally killer. But I think it boils down to the identity proposition and the stuff in sales tools like CRM systems. I think that's really interesting. The other one is, it could have been, like, I don't think you get to 26 billion without it being a bidding war. And so I suspect there were other people in the fray trying to bid for LinkedIn. And so strategically, there was probably a play there of like, hey, cool, we're taking it off the market from the likes of Salesforce. By the way, Salesforce just went to AWS for hosting their cloud stuff. They were getting all chummy with Microsoft for a long time, especially when Satya went to their conference. There was a bunch of office work done with Salesforce. Then they chose to go to Azure. So there's obviously not a whole lot of...
AWS.
Sorry, went to AWS. So there's obviously not a whole lot of... maybe not as quite as close as we originally thought. And so Microsoft might have been like, hey, well, we're going to go buy by LinkedIn. Make sure it takes it off the table from the likes of Facebook, who basically own your personal identity, but not your professional identity, and Salesforce, who could do with all that data. So I think that's an interesting strategy too.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see how they leverage this, or if they do leverage this with their own CRM story to try and have a better CRM story than what Salesforce has as a position against Salesforce. I know we have Dynamics, which is pretty popular in a lot of different organizations. Salesforce is not ubiquitous across everyone. So CRM, Microsoft CRM or Dynamics may have a nice new confusion from this. Yeah. You know, one thing that I am really curious about, and this is not, I blogged about this when the news came out, and this isn't so much trying to be a naysayer or trying to be slam things of the direction that people are going with this. But I do think that it does raise some interesting questions or some interesting things that people are going to have to, I'm curious to see how Microsoft is going to handle it as a developer. So let's take a step back. It mostly is around your data, right? Who owns your data? The stuff over in LinkedIn, I own my personal my personal data. My personal data, you could say, is spread between Twitter and Facebook, but my personal data is all inside of LinkedIn. Now, let's just say my use case doesn't really apply so much for what I'm about to say, because I'm just an individual, independent. I don't have a ton of data inside of Office 365 except for my email. But let's just say that you work for a company like, I don't know, let's just say Contoso. And Contoso's on Office 365. So you have all the stuff that we currently have today in Office 365, where I've got email, I know about my meetings, it knows about the chat conversations I'm having, it knows about Yammer, it knows about the stuff that I have stored inside of OneDrive for Business and stuff that documents and stuff that I'm working on inside of SharePoint. And you got products like Delve that do a really good job of surfacing data and intelligence between these different things, these different data silos of the stuff that I do and the people I interact with inside using the Office Graph to go through and expose this stuff inside of Delve. So that's all great and I get it. And all that data is technically owned by Contoso, by my employer, because it's stuff that I'm doing on behalf of the company. So now let's go and let's take something like, say, my professional network that you would never really want to give a lot of the stuff that goes on inside of LinkedIn. You would never want to share that with your employer, because a lot of us use that to find other jobs or to talk to people about other jobs. And recruiters use it to find us as well. Okay, I guess the bad side of LinkedIn, but or the annoying side. But companies also use it to find employees as well. So now that Microsoft owns LinkedIn, or once the deal closes, I think it's supposed to close at the end of the calendar year of 2016. Let's just say it goes through and Microsoft owns this data as well. There is definitely a play to be said that there is advantages to being able to merge and mishmash the data inside of LinkedIn with the data that I currently have in Office 365 on an individual. Today, as a developer, I could build an application, go in and say, give it admin consent. Now, a tenant admin, somebody in the security group has to approve this, but I can write an application that can read anybody's email inside the organization, and still it's all organization-based data. But I guess my question is, it's going to take, or my observation or my concern is that, man, it's going to take a significant amount of forethought and a significant amount of security and permissions and checks and balances to ensure that the data that I have from LinkedIn, that arguably is Andrew Connell's data, not Contoso's data, when now the same company owns both of them, and there are definitely advantages to merging this and drawing links between this stuff, between this data under the same company. We got to just, how much control are people going to have with the stuff that's inside of LinkedIn? How much is it going to be able to be merged up? I get it. I mean, other people have this data already. You know, let's just be the whole conspiracy theory. I know that NSA has got a bunch of data on a bunch of people all across the world, right? It's not in their business interest though to expose that, right? They maybe to certain customers within the intelligence organization, but it's not so much, it's not in their business interest to expose that. However, as a Microsoft shareholder, I sure would like to see a way of how we can go about doing that. Right?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, this is the most valuable professional data set in the world.
Yep, agreed.
Nobody, this is the only data set of its kind in the world.
Aside from the fact that I did get endorsed for cooking on a big green egg, that's kind of odd inside of LinkedIn.
So the quality of the data may not be the best.
Well, no, I'm saying that's true. It just may not be applicable.
That's right. I agree with you. I think there's some serious concerns there. Here's the trick, though. Like, here's what I would love to see Microsoft do with it. I would love to see Microsoft turn LinkedIn or the data in LinkedIn or what have you, for it to become your professional identity, your personal professional identity, no matter where you work. So like when I come work at Hyperfish, I hook it up with my Hyperfish account or what have you, but I own all the data in LinkedIn or my professional identity in LinkedIn, right? All my skills, my work history, my project history, endorsements, all that sort of stuff. And really, while I'm at Hyperfish or while I'm at Contoso or whatever, I get to use that information in my job. So for example, like people finding other people inside a company who've got big green egg experience, right? Having that connection would help people inside a company find other people inside the same company that have skills in certain areas, experience, all that sort of stuff. But when I move companies, my professional identity goes with me. And that's the thing I think we really lack today is like when I moved from Microsoft to Hyperfish, for example, none of my profile or skills, experience, or anything that I'd collected in my Microsoft identity went with me. And it's all manual. I have to copy bits and pieces into LinkedIn or what have you. It's all a mishmash of crappy data in both locations. It's not like my central professional identity that just roams with me. And I think Microsoft has the ability to bring that, you know, sort of security and identity part of the puzzle together with the data richness and content that LinkedIn has and do something really interesting with that. I completely agree with you that you obviously don't want your employer access to everything, and it should be the person's choice about what they bring to the table. But I definitely think there's something interesting there that could be done to bring those two worlds together.
Absolutely. I definitely agree. There's definitely an opportunity. I'm not being a naysayer. I'm not saying Microsoft can't do it. I'm curious to see. It's one hell of a challenge that they have to deal with. Another thing that this is going to be interesting too is around the training side. Because if you recall, LinkedIn the last year or two bought Lynda, huge video training library, huge competitor to Pluralsight. Mm-hmm. And so now with Pluralsight, Microsoft has been cozied up to Pluralsight with, you know, MSDN subscribers get access to a lot of content over in Pluralsight with a bunch of classes that are kind of included with your MSDN subscription. But man, it'd be interesting here. I mean, I haven't heard, you know, Pluralsight really even say anything publicly or privately about this acquisition, but with Microsoft picking up essentially a big competitor of theirs, with Microsoft audience being a huge customer of Pluralsight, there's a lot of content already inside of LinkedIn, you know, from Lynda. What would Microsoft do with this? Is it a Channel 9 play? Is it still part of the extension of the Virtual Academy?
I don't think it's a core business, and I would be surprised if they sell it.
Yeah, sell it or.
I don't see why they wouldn't sell it off. Like it's just, it's not a core competency and not a core business for them, providing training content like that. So maybe it'll live on inside LinkedIn. I don't know. Maybe they'll sell it. Maybe it'll just sort of trickle along like it has. Hey, here's something else to think about. The acquisition gives Microsoft $3 extra billion to add to its annual cloud revenue run rate number. Mm. So it'll jump from like whatever it is right now, 15 or no,
87.
10 billion. Yeah, 10 billion.
Yeah.
I think it was the last. The commercial cloud revenue number, which I believe includes Azure and Office 365 and things like that, I think is about 10 billion revenue run rate. So in the next 12 months, that's what they expect to do. This adds $3 billion to that number. And if you notice, if you watch the financial calls with Wall Street these days, Microsoft talks a lot about this number, right? As its forecast of its revenue over the next 12 months for its cloud business. And it's basically trying to paint the picture that it's becoming a cloud company. And this just bumped their revenue number by 30%.
That's a big number.
That is a big number. So although they're paying for it, that's cash they have sitting around. In fact, they're actually borrowing the money to buy this because most of their money is overseas and they don't want to bring it back to the States and get taxed on it. So they're borrowing money. It's cheaper for them to borrow money in the States to pay for this than it is to bring money in from overseas to pay for it.
Oh,
which in and of itself is completely messed up. But
yeah, it is what it is. That's another thing that I had heard speculation about. This is mostly a tax play, the same way that I guess I had heard in through different channels that Nokia was like also the Nokia purchase was a very much a tax play used with overseas money.
That was overseas money for sure. This is definitely not overseas money from what I've heard, and that they're borrowing domestically in the US to pay for it. But when you can borrow money so cheaply and still have all your cash in your bank, then why wouldn't you? So yeah, they get to borrow the money to do it. So they're effectively doing it for free because the rates that Microsoft pay on borrowed money is very, very low because they've got AAA rating. And they get to keep all the cash and they get to add $3 billion in cloud revenue to their run rate number immediately, which from a numbers perspective is going to look great. So we'll see.
It's an interesting move. Interesting move. So
we would love to hear from, I guess, listeners on this and send us your thoughts on it, good or bad. We want to hear them all. So jump on the website and submit a WAV file to us. We'll play it on the show. We'd love to hear what you think about this.
Absolutely. Yeah, this one's, we definitely want to hear your thoughts on it. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out over the next few years. This is definitely not going to be a one year kind of a thing. It's going to take a while to see this kind of run out.
I definitely joked to somebody yesterday. I was like, oh gosh, we should totally pivot and build a new LinkedIn. Because I kind of wish I'd done that when Microsoft bought Yammer.
Mm.
And there's a bunch of acquisitions that Microsoft have done where I'll be polite, right? The execution has not gone all that well.
No.
And I think there's definitely a space for people that want to go build the new LinkedIn to go and do that. But we'll see. Satch is a different guy, and hopefully the execution on this will go well. I really would love to see it go swimmingly, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, just like you said, the acquisition has been, their track record's kind of back and forth on this one. I mean, we'll see. This is a big acquisition, so it's going to take some time to get through this and to see how it all shakes out. So
I'm kind of bullish that they're going to be running it as an independent, separate company for now.
Yeah.
And we'll see how long that lasts, but I think Satya is going to be very wary of screwing this one up. Anyway, I guess time will tell. So that's LinkedIn news. Why don't we finish up with some picks?
Sounds good. You want to go first? I only have one, and it's a pretty quick one.
Yeah, I've got two, but they're very closely related. So as we've been building our products out, as you heard last week, we talked to JD Trask from Raygun about crash analytics and user monitoring. We use Raygun, as I mentioned on that show, but we also use some other hosted services, and two of which, one is called Elephant SQL, and the other one is called Cloud AMQP. And they're from the same company, but in effect, what they are hosted PostgreSQL and hosted RabbitMQ. Neither of these technologies are PaaS, right? You can run them yourself. You can spin them up in a container or run a VM with them on it. You can do all that sort of stuff yourself. But what these guys do, Elephant SQL and Cloud AMQP, is take away all of that hassle of having to do it yourself. And so they're kind of a bit like PaaS, except you get some additional choices. So for example, we can get RabbitMQ, which is a message bus type queuing system for message passing between our services. I don't want to run RabbitMQ myself in a high availability mode with all of the malarkey that goes along with that. We go pay Cloud AMQP to do that for us, and we get to choose where they host it. And so, for example, we go in and say, I want a RabbitMQ instance of this particular size with these high availability characteristics, and I want to put it in the Azure US West data center. And they'll go spin it up and pop it in there. It goes in their subscription, so we don't see the infrastructure in our Azure subscriptions. So it's kind of like PaaS in that regard, in terms of we're just buying a hosted service from somebody, but you do get a bunch more control about where it goes. So you can get it hosted in AWS or in Azure, or in, there's a couple of other places you can get it hosted. They have some free plans to get started, but the way I think about this is we could become an expert in hosting RabbitMQ or Postgres or something like that. But until we are, then it's much more cost effective for us to go buy it off somebody else. And so these guys do a really good job of it. I was very impressed. So that's Elephant SQL and Cloud AMQP.
Mm, very cool. Yeah, it's interesting. It's a, like you said, it's not a PaaS offering. It's not a SaaS offering. There are some things you have to install and you have to manage, but they're doing that and providing it as a PaaS offering by handling all the infrastructure for you and just charging you a monthly amount.
Yeah, it's kind of like service as a product in many ways. You don't ever deal with anybody. There's a console and all that. Yeah. But behind the scenes, they're deploying some IaaS nodes, but just doing all the automated monitoring and stuff for you. So it's worked out really well for us so far. So definitely check them out.
It's definitely one to take a look at.
How about you?
So I have two picks. So the first one I kind of hinted at earlier, that's Angular version 2 or Angular 2. I'm really happy with what they've done. I'm really impressed with it. I will say that there is a bit more work on the startup side or getting ramped up on it. It's mostly around the fact that Angular 2, they take advantage of the latest and greatest web technology. So around bundlers and module loaders, TypeScript, a bunch of stuff like that. So you do have to, if you haven't paid attention to that area of the client-side dev world, there is a bit of a ramp-up that you have to get. But I'd say the part about Angular that I really like about Angular 2 that I really like is it's kind of threefold. So one, it's incredibly fast, much faster than what we had before. I think that even in the release candidate as we sit right now, it's something like 28% the size of what the original library for Angular 1 was. So something like 46K compared to 170K, and they said they're going to get that even smaller.
That's great.
Another piece, too, that's much faster is they've done some really cool things about speeding it up. So your templates are automatically cached, compiled to JavaScript and sent down. Even your HTML templates, they're automatically built as JavaScript and sent down without you having to do anything. And it does lazy loading based on route. So it doesn't load everything automatically. It looks at all your routes, and with the one that you're on, you get everything that you need, but it also will go pull back some additional routing templates and controllers from those other routes. The other big thing to it, so that speed is one thing. The other thing that I really, really like about it is that they were able to shrink it by getting rid of a lot of stuff. So there was a big surface area you had to learn with Angular 1. And what's cool about it is they've removed a ton of this stuff because have made this really cool little discovery that we've had all along. And that's essentially that properties and events that are on the DOM, on the document object model in the browser, we could bind directly to those. The trick was that with HTML, those tags that we dealt with things, well, let's just say it was a CSS class on a paragraph tag, you would always say, you know, in the opening paragraph tag, you'd say class equals something. That was something that had to be mapped to an internal property on that paragraph tag. But there were other things like click events and all the other stuff that you could attach to using like the on click event. Well, what the Angular guys did is they figured out that if you take a class or if you take a property and you surround it with square brackets, that could actually bind straight to the property and bypass all the HTML. So what's cool about it, let's say you had a CSS class named selected. I could say inside the paragraph tag, I could say open square bracket class.selected, close square bracket equals, and then put an expression, a Boolean expression. So the selected class would be added to that paragraph tag if that expression evaluated to true. And I wouldn't have to add all this extra stuff. That allowed them to get rid of a lot of different things like, you know, ng-click and ng-app and ng, a bunch of those different ng things. There's two or three of them that we do have, but of the 43 that we had, I think we're down to like below 5. So that's just some of the stuff with Angular 2. I find it that you write less Angular because the surface area is much smaller and you do more writing of classic JavaScript or TypeScript style classes and just decorate them telling Angular, here's what this thing is and here's how it can be used.
Yeah, I guess they've learned a lot from Angular 1 and how people use it and it kind of gives them the ability to not do a complete fresh start, but learn from their mistakes the first time around and redesign stuff.
I would actually challenge one thing you just said there. It is a complete rewrite. They rewrote it from the ground up. And then they looked at what the migration story would actually look like. And people that have done Angular 1 apps, just going to say, your app is not going to migrate over. You're going to want to rewrite it. I mean, there are things they've done to make it a little bit easier, but you're going to want to rewrite it. Think of this as going from ASP.NET web forms to MVC. There is no direct mapping path, but we can see the value.
Gotcha.
My other pick, and I'll just throw this one out pretty quick, is one called Wallaby. So Wallaby.js is really slick. It's not a free tool, but it's one that, I mean, I'm seriously considering forking over the $100 to go through and get it myself. It's got a really cool extension into a lot of different editors like WebStorm and Visual Studio Code. But essentially what it does is that if you're doing client-side based development, Wallaby does is it will run your tests right in line where you're working on the test as the tests change or as the underlying code changes. And it shows you a little green or red little icon in the gutter to the left of the function. And it also will show you the error message of the test when the test fails. So instead of you having to go run your test to see if everything passes, it's constantly running them in the background and leaving it right you inside of your editor. So it removes that step of having to always have a console window open that's constantly running all of your tests and trying to filter those down. This is smart enough to only run the tests that have changed and to show you those changes right inside your editor. So
interesting.
It's really slick. They got some cool videos up on their site on for Wallaby.js. And I think it's $100 per named user or $160 for a company seat that you could move from
goes
user
between
to user.
Users. Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Nice picks.
Yep. There you
awesome.
Go.
Awesome. Well, thanks for the show, AC. Another one in the bag. Talked about a ton of news and LinkedIn, obviously. So, like I said, we'll be interested to hear what people have to say about this, and we'll watch this play out over the next couple of years, I suspect.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely.
Excellent. Absolutely. Well, thanks very much. Chat to you next time.
Absolutely. Have a good one, man.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide us a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes for each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading to our website and entering your email to interact with us. Participate in upcoming interviews and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.